This show is not intended for the politically correct or the close-minded. Enter at the risk of opening your eyes. You have been warned.
Why does the media attack an issue? To get primetime ratings?
Line of work, you got to keep repeating things over and over and over again for the truth to sink in.
The Army Air Forces has announced that a flying disc has been found and is now in the possession of the Army.
A moment comes when we step out from the old to the new, and when the soul of a nation, long suppressed, finds utterance.
Kind of catapult the propaganda.
You are listening to Open Eyes with your host, Ira Robinson. From the normal to the paranormal, from government cover-ups to the depths of our consciousness, we aim to explore all things. From the dawn of prehistory to current events, no topic is forbidden and nothing remains hidden.
No more secrets.
Open your eyes and open your mind to the fact that life as we know it is not as we have been taught. Join us at latenightinthemidlands.com or openeyesnetwork.com as we take this brief journey through the depths of the cosmos and explore what it really means to be human.
Many peoples have sacrificed their liberties only to learn to their sorrow that deceit and mockery, poverty and tyranny are their reward.
Whether you're online or offline, intercontinental or intergalactic, hello, and welcome to Open Eyes. So, today is Monday, February, 9th, 10th, 12th, 18th? I don't know, I lose track of time so easily these days. It's terrible, I know. I think it's the 9th, though. Anyways, it's a Monday. It's been a Monday so far, and very interesting days indeed. So I hope today has been finding you well. I hope you're ready to sit down and have a nice conversation tonight. I'm going to speak about a topic that I've touched on a little bit before if you were listening to my 30-minute version of my show before I expanded it into the current format. I covered it a small bit there, but it'll be nice to be able to expand on things a little bit here. I'm going to talk about the subject of energy vampires and something that I term as little friends. I'm also going to get into the topic of multiple dimensions and interdimensional beings and so on and so forth. So hopefully it'll turn out to be a very interesting conversation for you guys. I know it will be for my side of things. I enjoy talking about this topic quite a bit. So hopefully you guys will stick around and learn a little bit, maybe some things that you haven't heard before or that you haven't known about in the past. We'll see. So before we get to all of that, I do have some news that I want to go into. The biggest news, or well, not the biggest, but the first piece of news that I wanted to bring you guys is the President Ovamit decided to come out this week at a national prayer breakfast and proceeded to, I guess, at least according to the talking heads, proceeded to insult Christians, Christianity, and everything that they stand for, and now they're whole bunch of people out there calling for his blood. I found an audio clip that really goes to the heart of this issue, I guess you could say, even though it, to me, it is sort of a non-issue, but I'll go into the reasons for that here in a bit. The president, I have an audio clip for you. It's one that was from Fox, and in the audio clip, you'll hear the exact words that the president had to say, and I'll let you be your own judge as far as that goes. There's also the people from Fox. I think it was on what, Fox and Friends or whatever the heck the show is called. During the broadcast there, the opinion piece that was given was by Tucker Carlson. I believe that's his name. Anyways, he had something to say to it there as well. And I thought that I would leave that part of the clip in so that you guys could hear it loud and clear. And I'll go into everything here in a moment. So take a listen. You're going to hear the president first and then Tucker Carlson after that.
And lest we get on our high horse and think this is unique to some other place, remember that during the Crusades and the Inquisition, people committed terrible deeds in the name of Christ. In our home country, slavery and Jim Crow all too often was justified in the name of Christ.
So we're responsible for the Crusades 1,000 years ago? Who is us anyway? And by the way, who ended slavery and Jim Crow?
Christians. It was completely inappropriate.
The Reverend Martin Luther King. Christianity is the reason we don't have slavery in the world today. I mean,
well,
talk
do you
about
know, and think about
ahistorical.
Who's at the National Prayer Breakfast?
Okay, so did you catch that? He had a couple of things to say there. First off, the president was referring to the Muslim jihadis that are out there doing all the stuff that they're doing with ISIS and all of that stuff, which we know we can call BS on that whole deal as well anyways. But when he was speaking about all of that, he was telling them that Christianity basically has no leg to stand on because of the fact that Christianity has been just as guilty of doing things like what you see the Muslim extremists doing in the past. Now, there's a couple of things that I wanted to say in regard to this because I know a lot of people are talking about this. I mean, I've seen a lot of people speaking about this whole thing and I have to jump in and try to bring a little bit of light of truth to this issue because, well, there's not a whole lot of that going on. The problem with this guy's argument is that, first of all, there is still slavery in the world. I don't know where he comes off saying that there's no slavery in the world anymore because Christianity eliminated it or Christians eliminated it, but he's full of crap. There is still slavery in the world. There is a very prevalent problem with slavery in the world, in fact. In 2014, the numbers have been released that as of 2014, there are over 35.5 million people that are enslaved right now across the world. 35.5 million people are still subjected to modern day slavery. And that's not even counting the actual slavery that being a wage worker actually is as well. But this is just flat out slaves. And these are in regards to labor and also the sex slavery trade that has gone on. The fact that this guy is trying to claim slavery doesn't exist, you can call BS on this whole argument right from the beginning of it. Okay, he does not have a place or, you know, a leg to stand on that argument there. 1.2 million people are trafficked every year. 1.2 million people are trafficked on a yearly basis. 300,000 of those being children. And most of those are going right into the sex trafficking industry that is a worldwide problem. Slavery still exists. Just because you ignore something does not make it false, okay? That's, I guess, the biggest takeaway from that idea. I mean, that's a sick statistic. And for a major news organization to claim that there is no slavery and that Christians eliminated it is ridiculous and it's dangerous. I mean, it ignores the actual problem that's there. This is somebody that's coming forward with everything is fine and it's a bed of roses kind of attitude. But that's not what the truth is. The truth is the truth. Whether you guys want to admit it or not, and whether people want to face it or not, the problem is that the truth is there to be seen. So next, the Fox actors notice the wording there, Fox actors, because this all is propaganda and these people are just actors on a stage. Get that clear. The Fox actors tried to claim that Christians should not be held responsible for things that happened 1,000 or 800 years ago, since no one was alive, no one that's alive now was around back then, and participating in the things that happened. And I don't disagree with that portion of things, but to then go on and ignore the fact that there are still extremists in the Christian religion here and now, again, sends a dangerous message. I mean, it's propaganda, all of it, designed to make people feel good about themselves and their religion. In 2013, a historian from the Middle East named Juan Cole compared body counts between violence that was committed by Christians and that committed by Muslims just within the 20th century. He found that violence in relation to Muslim peoples or Muslim violence killed essentially around 200 million, or I'm sorry, 2 million people, mostly during the Iran-Iraq war and the war in Afghanistan. Violence by Christians, however, claimed the lives of over 100 million people just during the 20th century alone. Now, some of the violence that was enacted on the part of Christianity or Christians was World War I, World War II, the Holocaust, the colonial wars in Asia and Africa. There was a large majority of things that happened during the 20th century alone in relation to Christianity and those who are following or were following the Christian religion and did the things that they did based upon what they believed because of the Christian religion. Now, some people say that the people may have been Christian but didn't do things in the name of Christianity, but the same can be said about a lot of these Muslim extremists that are out there as well. The exact same things have been stated about them. So you can't gloss over the one while acknowledging the other, you see. You can't play that game and still be considered to be honest with yourself. I almost said Amish with yourself. I don't know what sense that would make. But you can't do the one and ignore the other and still consider yourself being honest. If you're going to claim one, you have to claim them both. In 1990s, the sectarian warfare in the Balkans basically arrived to the point of being a genocide against Muslim Bosnians by Serbian Orthodox Christians. A researcher named Keith Dout said in a 2007 paper that the Serbian Orthodox Church was one of the prime movers in the campaign to scapegoat Bosnian Muslims and justify the eventual ethnic cleansing and genocide that took place. He noted that the role of the church as protector of the Serbian nation gave the church increasing social control, and with this power, clergy fermented a xenophobic and bigoted attitude towards Muslims in former Yugoslavia. Then if you consider the role that Christian churches have played in Rwanda, you again see a genocide going on, and though nobody really talks about that one, during the mass slaughter that was going on, churches became sites of slaughter carried out even at the altar. I mean, how many gays have faced vehement violence against them based upon the Christian thought pattern that it is wrong for them to be gay? I saw it quite a few times during my days growing up, and even today, that people who were gay would get beaten, and sometimes to death, just based on the fact that they were gay, and somebody who was Christian took umbrage at the fact that they were gay and decided to take it out on them. I'm actually going to go into the anti-gay agenda some on Friday. I really recommend that you tune in, because there is a lot of people that are out there that bash on gays, or that are against gay people and lesbians and so on and so forth, just based upon that fact that they say the Bible speaks out against it. And I'm going to go in real good depth about exactly what the Bible has to say regarding gay people or homosexuals or whatever you want to call it. There is a lot actually that the Bible has to say on the subject, and I really recommend you tuning into it. That'll be on Friday. How many Native Americans were genocided because of the idea of manifest destiny? This was a Christian-based doctrine that was put forward to say, oh, well, we have this manifest destiny to control this continent for the ultimate goal of Christianity, of Christianizing this area. How many were killed, sterilized, and made incapable of having children, removed from their families, given over to Christian facilities, and beaten if they did anything reminiscent of their Indian heritage or spoke a single syllable of their language? This went on even up to the 60s and the 70s that this kind of thing was going on. And even still is happening today. It just is not acknowledged that it's going on. But you can look around at some of the things that are going on in the tribes here in America and in Canada, and you'll see that for instance, the Department of Family Services, or CPS, the Children and Protective Service, or whatever it's called in your state, these people will go into a tribal area and remove children wholesale from the tribal areas and give them over as wards of the state, which then turn them over to a lot of times the Christian-run facilities, especially Catholic, but Christian-run facilities like orphanages and such. And the children in there are so far removed from their heritage that they have zero connection left to it. I know personally quite a few who were removed from the tribal areas that are from my tribe and have gone into these facilities. They were beaten. Their hair was cut. All of their heritage items were taken away. Anything that could possibly remind them of the fact that they were Indian was taken away. If they did anything that was remotely considered Indian or spoke even one little syllable of their original language, they were beaten, and sometimes quite severely for it. They were taught to hate who they were. They were taught to hate where they came from. By the time all was said and done, the tribes are left with dwindled numbers because the children never come back to the tribes. They're so far removed from their heritage that they never bother going back. They hate who they are. And this is a sad statement. And this is all done with the idea in mind to essentially beat the savage out of them. All these things were done in history with all of this because they were savages. They were unchristian beings that needed to have the uncivilized nature removed from them by force if necessary. I mean, all groups of people, no matter who or what you are and what you follow or what you think you follow, all groups of people are subject to the extremes within them. And the extremes are the ones that make the change that happens in whatever group it is that you're in. So you could have a small minority of people who are extremists within your group. Let's take Christianity as an example. And those extremists can put forward their agendas to the point where people don't have a choice but to follow them. It happens. Look into the history of Nazi Germany and you'll see that that's exactly what occurred in Nazi Germany. People were surprised by the fact that Nazism became such a prevalence, but most people ignored it because they thought that they were just extremists. By the time that they were able to pay attention, people were already being put into concentration camps and their government had been completely compromised. And then the German people were left wondering, what the hell are we going to do now? We don't have a choice but to follow this stuff. That's how it goes. So the takeaway from all of this is to make sure that you're paying attention to the truths of all of this stuff. A lot of people are trying to put out the propaganda that says, oh, well, this group didn't do this, or, oh, well, history is history and we shouldn't look at it. No, history should be looked at. We should remember exactly what happened during history, because if you don't, what happens? You're doomed to repeat it. History is important. And it's important to acknowledge what extremes your own group has gone through so that you can never allow it to happen again. Because if it happened once, it can happen again. It's cyclical. If it happened once, if people were able to use your religion, for instance, as an example, if people were able to use your religion as the basis to have these different things go on, these genocides, these holocausts, these whatever it is that you want to call them, if people were able to use those religions as that baseline for this type of thing to occur back then, it can happen again. And it very likely will if you don't pay attention to what could go on. I hope you guys are getting that message. This is not just about Christianity. This is about everything. The Supreme Court has ruled that cops do not have to have a warrant to search the home. The Supreme Court ruled Tuesday that police don't need a warrant to search your property. As long as two occupants disagree about allowing officers to enter and the resident who refuses access is then arrested, police may enter the residence. Ruth Bader Ginsburg wrote, "Instead of adhering to the warrant requirement, today's decision tells the police that they may dodge it, never mind ample time to secure the approval of a neutral magistrate." Tuesday's ruling, she added, shrinks to petite size our holding in Georgia versus Randolph. Now, Georgia versus Randolph was a case that was similar to this, where the Supreme Court in 2006 decided that a domestic violence suspect would not allow police to enter into his house, although his wife did say that they were allowed to come in. The police ultimately entered into the home. The court ruled in the case that the man's refusal while being present in the home should have kept authorities from entering. A physically present inhabitant's express refusal of consent to a police search of his home is dispositive as to him, regardless of the consent of a fellow occupant. That was the majority ruling in that particular case. So Alito was the majority leader for this particular case, and he said that police did not need to take the time to get a magistrate's approval before entering a home in such cases. But dissenters led by Ruth Bader Ginsburg warned that the decision would erode protections against warrantless home searches. The court had previously held that such protections were at the very core of the Fourth Amendment and its ban on unreasonable searches and seizures. The Alito said in the 6-3 decision that a occupant may not object to a search when he's not at home. Now, this enters into some extremely dangerous territory for us, the citizens of the United States. And I hope that you can see exactly the waters that are being entered into with this. This is a very dangerous thing. This is quickly coming on the heels of the Supreme Court deciding, what, a month ago, maybe two, they decided that the police don't even need to know the law in order to that they are enforcing. The U.S. Supreme Court ruled 8-1 that citizens have no protection against the Fourth Amendment violations by police officers who are ignorant of the law. From the article regarding this, in a blow to the constitutional rights of citizens, the United States Supreme Court ruled 8-1 in Hines versus the state of North Carolina that police officers are permitted to violate American citizens' Fourth Amendment rights if the violation results from a reasonable mistake about the law on the part of police. So the citizens, we the people, cannot claim ignorance of the law, because ignorance of the law is no excuse, as established in the 1960s by the Supreme Court. However, police are exempted from that particular rule. And that's ridiculous. I mean, it pisses me off whether or not, regardless of the usage of it, this something like that pisses me off. This totally erodes and eradicates the ideas of the Constitution and our Bill of Rights. This is a dangerous situation. Pay attention, guys. See where it's leading. There's a trail of breadcrumbs to follow with this. Okay, so in regards to more propaganda, especially on the media's part, Brian Williams is stepping away from NBC Nightly News for a number of days. This has the number of days has been unestablished as of yet. Brian Williams, who is supposedly America's number one journalist, the most trusted journalist out there, was busted when he lied about how he got famous. The anchor sent a note to the show's staff announcing that Lester Holt is replacing him for an unspecified amount of time. The news comes as Williams is embroiled in a scandal surrounding his story about being a passenger in a helicopter that took fire in Iraq in 2003. On January 30th, an NBC Nightly News clip was posted to Facebook in which Williams repeated a story that he had told previously about having been in the helicopter that was hit and went down during the Iraqi invasion. After the story was questioned, Williams apologized on NBC Nightly News, saying that his helicopter was following the one that was hit. This is a quote from him right here. "I feel terrible about making this mistake, especially since I found in my own writing about the incident from back in 08, and I was indeed on the Chinook behind the bird that took the RPG in the tail housing just above the ramp." So, do you see the shillery going on? I'm wondering who exactly Brian Williams ticked off, because normally, when things like this occur, when the people who are there on the screens are found to be lying or fabricating things or whatever it may be, in general, they're really glossed over. They're not talked about. They're not given much of a media presence. You know, the stories, they're covered up as much as possible. But here you see this one blowing wide open. So I wonder who exactly he ticked off that allows this type of thing to go forward. But on the second hand, on another note with it, I want you guys to really pay close attention to this issue, because although it may really be a non-issue, it is something that's of critical importance to understand. This is how the media works. It's all smoke and mirrors. You can't sit there and say with any kind of certainty that a person like this guy is going to misremember an incident like this. I'm sorry, but if I was in a helicopter that got hit by a damn RPG, you'd damn well bet I would know what the story was. Okay? If it was the copter that was in front of me or if it was mine, I would know the difference. I would remember an incident like this. So unless this guy is a moron, which I do not discount the possibility of, he's a talking head after all, but unless this guy is an abject moron, you're going to remember it. This guy was lying flat out from the get-go about it just to make himself appear as if he was something that he was not, something heroic, something for the American people to get behind. And okay, this guy we can trust because he's seen action. He's seen the stuff that's out there. He knows what he's talking about, and he's gonna be honest with us. That's how he got to be the most respected journalist, right? Look through the propaganda, guys. They're all guilty of it. This is the same type of thing as Geraldo Rivera revealing the items within Al Capone's glove box, right? It's the exact same thing. I don't know if you guys remember that, but I certainly do. It's along the same lines. It's all smoke and mirrors. It's all a show. So lawmakers are now attempting to pass a bill, pass legislation that exempts them from being arrested and prosecuted for corruption. Taking payoffs, breaking the law, and pushing through unconstitutional legislation as special favors to corporate interests has long been par for the course in politics. But now Representative Kevin Calvey of Oklahoma wants to make it official and now make it illegal to arrest any state officials accused of a public offense. Not only can they vote themselves a pay raise, not only can they vote themselves exempt from Obamacare, not only can they exempt, vote themselves to have lifetime pays and aids and free flights and free health care and free haircuts and on and on and on at the taxpayers' expenses. Not only can they do that, but now they're looking to make themselves exempted from even being subject to the damn law. What a ridiculous country we live in. And people out there are just completely ignoring this stupidity in favor of, oh, we got to watch wrestling. We got to watch football. We got to go to work, come home, drink our beer, watch soccer, and pay attention to whatever it is that the Royals are doing over across the sea, even though we went to a war with them to get away from having a monarchy, even though we have a monarchy here. People don't pay attention to this crap. And that's why this stuff is gotten away with. That's why our leaders are getting away with all of the crap that they're getting away with, because we're not paying attention. We're not seeing through the smoke and mirrors that they're putting out. We're too busy paying attention to the funny cartoon characters on the screen. We got to start taking this country back. But, you know, unfortunately, it is a fact that we live in a country that is filled with aggressively ignorant people. And getting through that ignorance is very difficult. It is not an easy task. I've been trying for a very long time to do it, and it's not an easy thing. We'll get there one day, though. We got to just keep our heads up, keep fighting, keep strong, keep talking, keep making sure that you're giving out the truth as much as you possibly can. Because the truth, regardless of whether or not you think it's a positive or a negative, regardless of the nature of it, regardless of who it's about and why, the truth is the truth, and it is, in the end, the most important thing. Simple as that. Okay, guys, so I'm going to take a break here real quick. I need to get some tea down my throat. I'm getting a little scratchy here. When we come back, I'm going to get into the topic of energy vampires, little friends, and all of that kind of good stuff. I think that it's going to be a good time. So, guys, stick around with us. We'll be back in just a few minutes. There are days that the red pill is bitter in my stomach, but I can't get it back out. I think because I have to. I speak because I have no choice. I walk through this dark age we're in with open eyes. Listen to Open Eyes on LateNightInTheMidlands.com. And together, maybe we won't stumble and fall. Have you been looking for answers? Have you been seeking the truth but can't seem to find it? Late Night in the Midlands has the answers for you. Whether you are interested in the paranormal, aliens and UFOs, alternative health information, or just a little hope and inspiration, we have a show for you. Late Night in the Midlands, Open Eyes, The Red Pill Reality Show, The Secret Teachings, Paranormal Perceptions, and The Turning of the Wheel. All here on the L&M Network for you to listen to at any time that you want. Everything is free to listen to, and though it is not required, we are listener supported, and all donations are deeply appreciated. You will not find shows like these in the mainstream media. Go to LateNightInTheMidlands.com to listen. The L&M Network, where the truth has no fear.
They went into the homes now, the powers that be, and told us that you cannot discipline your children anymore. And if you discipline your children, you were going to jail. Then they went into the public schools and took discipline out of there. So when we acted up in there, they put our boys into something called special ed classes. And as you know, those special ed classes are nothing but holding cells until they can go to the state prison. If we can have them convicted for a felony, then once they get out of prison, they cannot get a job because of that. And then if they happen to eke out and find a job, then they have to pay taxes on a job, yet they cannot vote. I call that taxation without representation. They did a grand thing when they took that discipline away from us, because when they made our parents afraid to discipline the children, then what happened? We found out that the teachers were afraid of the principals were scared of the superintendents, superintendent was scared of the school board was scared of the parents were scared of the children, and the children ain't scared of nobody.
love stuff like that. Thank you so much for sticking around through that break. I really appreciate it. My name is Ira, and you are listening to Open Eyes. If you guys have been enjoying the stuff that you guys have been hearing on Late Night in the Midlands, you know, we really would appreciate some help from you guys. We are listener supported at Late Night in the Midlands, and it's really of critical importance to keep supporting us in every way that you can. The comments are great. The feedback is wonderful, but in order to keep broadcasting and staying on the air, we really do need the help from you guys out there. So if you get anything out of what you hear on this network, some donation would be really appreciated. You could go to latenightinthemidlands.com and click on the subscribe button. Subscribing only costs $5 a month. All of the archives of the shows are always free to everybody, no matter who they are. You're more than welcome to come in and listen to everything that's available. But the if you're a subscriber, you're giving support to the network, to keeping shows like this one alive, to keeping shows like Late Night in the Midlands alive, the Secret Teachings, the Red Pill Reality Show, on and on and on. We really work really hard at bringing these things to you so that you guys can hear some truth, so that you guys can cut through some of the stuff that's out there that's floating around. So much of the media now is all about propaganda. It's all about agendas, and it's all about trying to convince you to buy the newest shiny toy, and whether that's an actual toy or a computer system or whatever it may be, there's so many shiny things out there for people to buy and people to take on, and you know, a lot of it is just, it's unnecessary, and it's just crazy. I mean, guys, how many people out there, I've seen this personally. I've seen this firsthand, that people will go out to eat as a family, and there'll be five people sitting there, you know, mother, father, and three kids sitting there. They've all got their cell phones out. They've all got their Bluetooth devices attached into their heads and listening to music or playing on a game or whatever. And instead of having a conversation together, they are texting to each other sitting at the table. I mean, whatever happened to connecting with people? You're going out, you're spending this cool time together, and what are you doing with it? You're texting each other instead of actually opening up your mouth and talking. This is a ridiculous situation that we have. It's just, I don't know, it's silly to me. It really is. And I wonder how much of it is tied into the ideas, actually, that I'm going to bring forward tonight a little bit with the thought of the energy vampires. I really do. I wonder if the whole country is being subjected to this sort of energy vortex that's pinning people down and holding people down. It's got me curious. Anyways, so tonight I wanted to talk to you about vampires. Boy, oh boy, vampires. It's a big subject. It's actually a pretty hot subject these days because of, well, the whole Twilight deal. And people are thinking a lot about vampires and zombies as well, of course. But that's been in the forefront of things for a long time now. But you know, the idea of vampires, you've sort of got the classic vampire, the Bram Stoker type vampire, where it's this ancient thing that is powerful and seductive, and watch out, keep your windows closed because he's going to come in the middle of the night and suck your blood, and so on and so forth. And then you have the lately versions where vampires are looked on sort of in a heroic way. They're sort of the heroes of the stories now, instead of being always the darker side of things. And although some of that may be due to just pop culture and the changing of the times, some of it actually may be following sort of an agenda with it, because I do believe that there are vampires out there. whether or not they're actual blood sucking vampires or not is sort of different from where I go. But for me, I fully believe in the idea of an energy vampire. An energy vampire is it's essentially the same as your classic idea of a vampire, where they're sucking away the life force of a person, but instead of it being an actual blood substance that they're draining out by biting into you and licking it away or swallowing it down, instead it's an energy. They're leeching away the life force of a person, their essence, instead of their blood as their essence. It's more of their energetic essence. So I term them as energy vampires just to signify the difference between the two. They have a deep connection with people. An energy vampire can connect with a person almost on a soul level, so to speak. And I don't really like using that terminology, but it's the closest approximation that I can give. They sort of connect on a real deep soul level with people. And because of that connection, they are able to, well, I guess you could say, get so deep into a person that the essence gets transferred between them and you. It goes based on the idea that, well, all of us are energy. That's essentially what it comes down to as a being here on planet Earth, or in this physicality of this universe. The fact is that what you see is not really what you get. We are much deeper than that. We, on a deeper level, we are at our core made up of energy. The physical things that you see, the solidity of things, doesn't even really exist. It's just the perceptions of it that make it seem real. But in reality, everything is made of atoms, which has a vast difference of space or distance of space between each atom. And even inside the atom itself, there is a vast amount of space in between. If you were to, for instance, scale up, scale up the size of the nucleus of an atom to golf ball size, let's say scale it upwards to the size of a golf ball, the protons and neutrons that are circling that nucleus of the atom would actually, if you were to put that golf ball in the center of a football field, those protons and neutrons would be spinning around it a distance away of being in the stands of the football field. That's how much space there is. We are quite literally 99.9999999% empty space. Everything is energy. Everything is at its core that energy. That's our essence, okay? So these energy vampires, they are beings who will drain away that essence, that energy. They can feed off of it. You can tell when they're around and connected to you by how you feel when you're around them. So, for instance, if you are around someone, you might feel depressed or drained, lacking creativity. You might feel angry, frustrated, and irritable. And it's like they're always that way. So, for example, if you're around someone and this person makes you feel in this way, but then you feel better as soon as you go away from them, they may very well be an energy vampire. They may actually be a vampire that has formed a connection with you. Whether or not they do it on purpose or not, that's a question that I get asked a lot when I talk about this subject. Do they do it on purpose? Do they do it intentionally? And the answer to that I give is some do, and some don't realize that they're doing it. So some people that you would class as an energy vampire do the things that they do on purpose. They actually seek out someone to feed off of. They do it, you know, with every intention in mind that this is how they're going to be and what they're going to do. There are, however, some that don't have any intention to do it, and it's sort of an accidental vampire situation that's going on. So if you, if they have connected with someone and they're draining them, they may not realize that they are an energy vampire, and there's no real negative intent behind it. It's just something that happens. It's sort of their, I don't know, you could say born with it. And this is how they've become, essentially. Those that do it intentionally will do everything that they can do to stay in your presence. So they will make every excuse that they can to stay by your side or to stay close to you. So you might get a phone call from them out of nowhere saying, "Hey, let's go here and get together. Let's go to the mall and get together and go walk around and go shop or whatever." And then you agree, you go to the mall, and you start getting drained because they're in your presence. You start getting tired and headachy and, okay, I got to go home. This is not really all that fun to me. And then you tell them, "Well, hey, I'm going to take off." And they're like, "Oh, well, no, let's go over here first. Let's go do this." And they'll make every excuse that they can to get you to stay. They'll do whatever they can to make you remain in their presence so that they can drain you further and further. I've known quite a few people over my lifetime that have been energy vampires, and they're fabulous at finding excuses to remain in your presence. "Oh, you're looking so sad. I don't really want to leave you alone because you're looking so sad and so alone. And I just would not feel comfortable knowing that you're like this and I'm going home and I can't do that. No, I'm going to stay with you. We'll go do something. Let's go over here and do this." They'll be very possessive of you, and they'll be very jealous of you and your time. So again, they will do everything they can to stay near you. And if anybody else was to come into the picture, they get very jealous over it. They get very adamant that, "No, this is you and me time," or, "Oh no, I don't really like Bertha. She's not a fun person to be around. Let's go get away from her." And on and on and on. They'll do everything that they can, again, to keep in your presence and also to keep you alone, to keep you by yourself. They're very possessive of you. You are their favorite flavor, so they're very possessive of you. They also, not always, but they also can be very touchy-feely types of people. So you'll have somebody that's an energy vampire, and they will be very huggy. They'll be always kind of stroking your arm or stroking your back or playing with your hair and that sort of thing. Very touchy-feely type of people. Now, I'm not saying that all touchy-feely people are that way. Don't get me wrong. I like touchy-feely people just as much as the next guy does. But when you are in their presence and they're touchy-feely, they're sort of reinforcing on you subconsciously on your part their possession of you. They're marking their territory essentially. And they, stroking and that sort of thing, it, sort of triggers things on the inside of our brains to make us feel more apt to relax around it. It's almost like, putting you into a hypnotic state, so to speak. So that touchy-feeliness is not out of some sense of caring about you. It is more about reinforcing their control over you. You get the difference? They also will be, or can be, not always, but by and large, the energy vampires that I've encountered in my life have been very emotionless type of people. So they will pretend to care. They might be able to fake emotions pretty well, but if you're paying attention, you can tell that the emotion that they're putting off is a fake one. You know, if your discernment is there to be able to tell what emotions people are feeling, you can tell that they're faking it. They actually can be very sociopathic in nature, that emotionless, that they're so cut off from being emotional beings that they're almost sociopathic by nature. So that all kind of covers the ones that are intentional with it. The main thing with the intentional ones is that they will, I guess you could say, find a flavor that is very tasty and will feed off of that one person for as long as they possibly can. And it's sort of like they hunt, they seek it out. Now, I'm not sure if any of this actually is where the original ideas as far as vampirism are concerned. Maybe this is all where it came from, that people would feel drained around people, that they would feel these things around certain people, and it began to become attributed to this idea that became vampires. I'm not sure if that's how things worked out. I'm not even sure, honestly, if energy vampires could be classed as being really humans, because, and especially in regards to the intentional ones. Now, the unintentional ones, I'll get into those in just a minute, but with the ones that are intentional about it, the ones that actually are going out and seeking this type of feeding mechanism going on, I'm not sure if they can actually be classed as being fully human beings, because they are, well, essentially almost kind of soulless. They're feeding off of you to replenish the parts of their soul that is missing. That's almost what it seems like to me as an observer to all of it. This is what I guess you could say I've come across with it all. And if you happen to be an energy vampire, I'd really like to know. Let me know. Send an email to feedback@openeyesnetwork.com. Let me know if you're an energy vampire and everything that you go through with it all, because I'd be curious. Hell, I'll interview you. I'll put you on the radio and do an interview with you. I'm sure there'd be a lot of people out there that are curious about exactly what it's like to be one of these types of things. I'd like to know the truth with it all. So as far as the unintentional ones are concerned, the unintentional energy vampires are a little bit different. They, unlike those that do it intentionally, these types do it more out of a need to feed on the misery of others. The idea of misery loves company really falls into the category of an unintentional energy vampire. They seem to, an unintentional energy vampire, I think, is more a person, you know, like a quote-unquote normal human being who is going through a period of time that they are lacking energy, that they're lacking the life force. Maybe they're actually being fed on by an energy vampire intentionally. Because of the connections that people can make, we do transfer energy between each other. And some people with this kind of a case, like I said, the unintentional types, it's very much sort of a need to feed on the misery of people. It's almost like the energy is going into a black hole of sorts. The gaping maw of their energy feeder feelers are leading to a black hole in their stomach or something. Weird analogy, but you know, that's the strange things that I think about. It's also often the case that they're fulfilling like a lack of energy that they themselves have, and they're kind of seeking it from you. The thing with the unintentional ones, they will do everything that they can to keep themselves, or at least to keep up the appearances of being in as miserable or depressed or sad state of affairs as they can be. I'll give you a great example. There's somebody that I know, and well, this has happened many times throughout my life as well, but in particular of late, there's somebody that I know that keeps getting involved in different relationships. And although this could relate to the emotional addictions thing that I talked about before, this is a little bit something different. This person, when they are in a relationship, they will do everything that they can to make themselves miserable in the relationship. And then they go to a person like me who is willing to help them out and talk to them and, you know, give them advice and that sort of thing. They will come to a person like me and they will latch on and drain the energy away from you with this miserable state of existence that they're in, drawing you in and making it so that you are essentially their energy source. I don't know if you've ever encountered that in your life, but I'm sure if you think about it, you probably have. I think most everybody has encountered this at least once in their lives, where it's somebody who is so abjectly miserable that getting around them, you literally feel like your life force is just, oh God, I can't be around her anymore. I can't be around her. I'm miserable when I'm around her. It's just a horrible experience. I know she's been my friend for years, but I just can't stand it anymore. You see, that's the kind of thing that you'll feel around this unintentional energy vampire. They don't always realize that they're doing it. That's why I call it unintentional. Most of the time, they don't realize that this is happening to them. And they're just kind of following a pattern that they've fallen into. They're just using everybody else essentially to get as much of an energy force back into themselves as they possibly can. It really is a sad state of affairs as far as the unintentional ones goes. Now the way to tell the difference between the two, I think probably the best way, is that if they are someone that you always feel that way around, then they are an intentional energy vampire. If they're someone that you feel that way around, like once in a while, like maybe once every couple of times that you see them, or you'll see them and you'll be that way for a few times, but then the rest of the time it's okay, that's an unintentional type. But if you're feeling that energy being drained away from you all the time, every time that you're around them, that's an intentional one. And another thing the energy vampires will do, just to finish up with this subject, the energy vampires also, and especially the intentional ones, the intentional ones are really specifically what I'm referring to here, but they will latch on to somebody. And they can even do it from a distance. So they don't have to be right there in your presence to get that connection going with somebody. I've even seen this type of thing happen where two people are talking in chat rooms across the internet and they're getting connected together. But you see, that's how energy works. At the core of things, everything is energy, and everything really is sort of one, you could say. We all sort of come from the same energy source. So because of that connection together, you can connect up with people that are at a distance. So even like over internet chat rooms or text messages or anything along those lines, the energy vampires can still feed on somebody. So how to break the connection? Well, that one I don't know for sure. I mean, for me, it's about putting forth a shield of sorts around myself where I don't let someone drain the energy away from me because I don't allow it, basically. It's all about what you are allowing yourself to go through. And if you put out the intention that you do not want to be subjected to this type of experience, then for me, at least in my experience, that's been enough to break any kind of connections that have been made with all of that. It might be a little bit different for you. If you are experiencing that kind of thing and you feel like you want some help, I can lead you probably through some different things as well. It's sort of a big topic in and of itself. But again, you could send an email to me at feedback@openeyesnetwork.com and I can see what I can do to help you out with it. I don't have a problem with that. So guys, I'm going to take a quick break here. When we come back, I'm going to talk about what I term little friends. And I'm also going to talk about some of the things as far as the interdimensional beings are concerned and see what we can get to come out of a topic like that. I think it'll be pretty interesting. So hold on for just a few minutes. We'll be back after these messages.
Open Eyes is dedicated to finding the truth in all matters. We are not afraid to be politically incorrect or to ask questions. Whether it is the paranormal, government cover-ups, the dark agenda that the puppet masters have in store for us, or aliens and UFOs, nothing remains hidden. Listen to Open Eyes, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, starting at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on LateNightInTheMidlands.com or OpenEyesNetwork.com. Open hearts, open minds, open eyes.
Tune into The Family Factor with Denny C. every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday morning at 5 a.m. as he looks at all the challenges facing the family today. Denny will give you a refreshingly new look at tackling some of the biggest issues. So start your day off on the right foot with Denny C. and The Family Factor, right here on the New Spark Radio Network and K98Talk.com. Sunshine.
The L&M Radio Network and Late Night in the Midlands depends on you, the listener. Without you, there would be no us. So help us continue to bring you the best guests with the best information and subscribe today. Information on becoming an L&M subscriber can be found at the top of LateNightInTheMidlands.com. Just click the About Subscriptions tab and become part of the family while helping the truth stay alive. And while you're at it, maybe subscriptions aren't for you. A one-time donation helps as well. Click that donate button on the right side of LateNightInTheMidlands.com and help us help you.
To hide the truth once you know it makes you think that you are better than everyone else. It makes you into the type of person who says, "Ooh, I have a secret, but you're not ready to hear it yet." However, for $39.95, I'll let you in on the secret. You'll lead the people to the promised land for the cheap price of three easy payments of one-third of their soul apiece.
Let me assure you that our priority will remain to ensure stability and security.
In order to ensure the security and continuing
security for Canadians.
Galactic Empire!
So this is how liberty dies. With thunderous applause.
So I want to challenge you all about what you think you know. You think that you're a human being and you know the way the world works, but I'm here to burst that bubble.
All of us are energy. A human being is a very complex pattern of energy.
The world ain't all sunshine and rainbows. It's a very mean and nasty place, and I don't care how tough you are, it will beat you to your knees and keep you there permanently if you let it. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward, how much you can take and keep moving forward.
Much more important to teach children to question what they read. Children should be taught to question everything. Children should be taught to question authority. Parents never teach their children to question authority because parents are authority figures themselves.
Like it or not, for the moment, the Earth is where we make our stand.
It's just a ride. We can change it anytime we want. It's only a choice. No effort, no work, no job, no savings of money. A choice right now between fear and love.
Because to be awoken means you're doing the work here to change this world right here in the now, where you're at now, from where you're at now.
The eyes of fear, once you put bigger locks on your door, buy guns, close yourself off. The eyes of love, instead, see all of us as one.
It underscores our responsibility to deal more kindly with one another and to preserve and cherish the pale blue dot, the only home we've ever known.
But I'm exactly where I wanted to be, because I realized I gotta commit my very being to this thing. I gotta breathe it, I gotta eat it, I gotta sleep it. And until you get there, you'll never be successful in life. But once you get there, I guarantee you, the world is yours. The world is yours.
That is indeed true. I have experienced exactly that in my life, and I try to encourage so many other people that I encounter that this type of thing is possible. It is possible to change your mindset, to change your perceptions, to change your perspective on what it is that you see happening in the world around you, and to let it all wash over you like it's just nothing, like changing a wave on an ocean to just a cool breeze that's blowing across you. It really is that much of a drastic difference. It really is that easy to do. The problem is that so many people have difficulties understanding that it really is just a matter of perspective. Yes, there are dark things going on in the world. Yes, there are negative things going on in the world, but you don't have to live in the negativity. You don't have to live in the darkness. You can look at it. You can face it. You can do something about it, but you don't have to live there. You don't have to be there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You don't have to. You can change your mind. You can change the way that you see things so that suddenly instead of the ocean wave getting ready to crash on top of you, drown you, and destroy you, you can change your mind and change the way that you look at that and see that instead it is just a cool breeze blowing across you, and it's nice, and it's calm, and it's peaceful. It really is that decision between fear and love. It really is that decision, because fear and love, the emotions, cannot exist at the same time in the same place. They're diametrically opposed to each other. You can only have one, and you can choose which one you want to feel. Thank you for sticking around through that break. My name is Ira, and you are listening to Open Eyes. I wanted to touch on the subject of little friends. These are what I've termed them. I wouldn't have a clue if they have an official name or anything along those lines. It's just something that I've encountered in my life that I've talked to other people about. I've taught them how to find them and exactly what they're about. And I've seen that people can, I guess you could say, change things so that they're no longer impacted by these little friends. So what is a little friend? Well, a little friend is sort of akin to the energy vampires, and that's why I generally talk about the two of them at the same time together, because they really do sort of relate together. Little friends are not sentient, at least as far as I'm aware. And I wonder if the energy vampires are actually sort of a sentient version of the little friends. So the little friends are, well, they feed on emotions, just like with energy vampires. However, these are more akin to animals or mosquitoes. I usually call them like ticks or leeches. They seem to exist in a phase that we don't normally interact with, that we don't normally detect, like with our human senses. The thing with little friends is that they feed on emotions really easily, I guess you could say. They also tend to cause pain in the body. So you might, if a little friend is around, basically it's like this little, well, like I said, like a tick, you know, if you kind of imagine a tick that is on your skin, its head buries down on the inside of the skin and it starts draining away your blood as it's attached to you. And these sort of work in the same way. These little friends, these little ticks, they attach themselves to you and they will start feeding off of you. And they will have a certain flavor that is their favorite flavor. So, for instance, you might have one that's attached to you that is akin to worrying or to anger. Let's take the anger one for an example. So you have this little friend who is feeding off of anger. And when it first attaches to you, it'll just be feeding off of you in the moments that you have where you are angry. And so you have this burst of anger and because you hit your foot or something like that, okay? Stubbed your toe. And you get mad at the couch. And darn you, couch. What did you do to me? You jumped right out and bit me. Well, the little friend will feed off of that anger that is there in you. Eventually, if they're attached long enough, they will grow large enough that they start craving more than just these fly-by-night type of emotional outbursts that you have. So they will actually start in my experience of things, they will start to, I guess you could say, inject into you the need to feel angry. So it will like inject a chemical or inject the impetus to feel angry. And so out of nowhere, you'll get an angry outburst. There's no reason for it. There's no rhyme to it. There's nothing that's going on that would make you upset or make you mad. And yet out of nowhere, you get mad. And that little friend then feeds off of that emotion. Like I said, each one of them sort of has a different flavor that they're attracted to. And some of them, it might be like a scale of flavors. So anger, slightly irate, that sort of thing. Those are all kind of akin to that singular emotion. And so that particular little friend will be attracted to that. Others, they do get attracted to the positive emotions as well. But by and large, the things that I've discovered is that they are attracted the most to the negatives because people swing to the negative emotions the easiest. In other words, it's easier to get angry at something than it is to fall in love with something, you see. Although the love is a more potent emotion, the anger is much easier to come. So the little friends, they will attach the negative emotions because that's what is easiest for them to get the food from, if that makes sense. I have seen them where they are of the more positive types, but by and large, they are on the negative side of things. So, like I said, you might also have one that's kind of attracted to pain. So you'll feel a pain in an area and there's no real reason for it happening. So you might get a pain in your thigh for no reason. You know, it's just suddenly out of nowhere a pain erupts there, and there's no muscular pain going on. There's no bone pain going on. It's just, oh my God, I'm suddenly painful. So like I said, there's the best way to tell when you've got one of these attached to you is to recognize when you're having an emotion, whether it's a good emotion or a bad emotion, out of nowhere. There's no real reason for it, no psychological or physiological explanation for it. It's just suddenly there and then it's gone. That's where they would have a tendency to be this little friend. I'm not saying it's that way in all cases. Some people do have some issues as far as that kind of thing is concerned, but by and large, it would be a little friend situation. So that's kind of the basics as far as little friends are concerned, like what they are, what they're about. I've heard, one person that I spoke to about this said that they sounded a little bit like, what they would call imps in certain, regions of the world. And when he mentioned that to me, I was like, yeah, you know, exactly. That is sort of what it's like. These things would sort of fall under that category. But again, I've never really heard anybody else really talking about this, and I feel that it's important to talk about. And a lot of people look at me like I'm crazy until I show them the things that go on with it, and then they're like, well, holy crap, that really has been happening. So how do you find them on you? Well, I will say it's easiest if someone else does it for you, because of the reasons I'll go into with this, but you can try to find them on yourself as well if you want to, but it really does make it easiest if you have someone else that's doing it for you. So what you do is you take your hands, and this is all going to sound strange, but trust me, it really does work. You take your hands and you rub them together really, really hard. Yeah, you get them going really, really fast and as hard and as fast as you can get them to go. Get the friction going really good. Get a real good amount of heat going on there. And then take your hands and run them across someone's skin. Now, they don't have to be naked or anything, although that makes it a lot more fun. Anyways, you take the hands and you just kind of run it above their skin, like an inch or maybe 2 inches above their skin. You don't actually go down and touch it. They can be wearing clothes. It doesn't matter. It's all about the energy that's being transferred with this. And what will happen is when you're running your hands across somebody, your hands are made really sensitive to this stuff. I don't know why it just ends up working out that way. When you're running across the skin and there's a little friend in a particular spot, when you run your hand across it, you're going to feel this sort of tapping sensation in the palm of your hand or somewhere in your hand that is only going to be there when you run it over that particular spot. So you can run it across, like, let's say their arm, and there's that tapping sensation or that ticking sensation on one particular spot. You move past it and you go back to it, and suddenly you'll be able to feel it again. It's going to be right there in that particular zone. Well, that's a little friend. That's where one of them is located. For some reason, they respond. You know, there's this sort of response that goes on between your body and theirs that allows you to know that this is happening. So when you find one, take your hand and just slap it down onto the person's skin where this thing is and grab hold of that little friend. And you put the intention in it that I'm grabbing this thing. And if you have it, by and large, everybody that I've taught to do this has said that what they'll feel is they'll feel that ticking then in their hand or kind of like this weird greasy or oily kind of sensation in their hand in that spot that they've grabbed them with. Well, then you take your hand to running water of some type. It can just be as simple as the water coming out of the tap or taking a bottle of water and running it over your hand, whatever it may be, just running water in one way or another. And that sort of washes them away. It sort of negates their connection to you and to this other person. Now, like I said, I know it sounds strange, and I know a lot of people are going to be like, what the hell is he talking about? He doesn't know what he's talking about. What's this crap? This is bull crap. I don't believe this a bit. Try it and see. Try it on somebody that you know has been having an issue with emotional outbursts or things like that. They will attach themselves to kids. They will attach themselves to adults. I've even seen them on animals. I've seen them, you know, attach themselves to animals and have this exact same sort of reactions going on with it all. It does work. They are there. They are real. And I'm not full of crap. I know what I'm talking about. I've been dealing with them for long enough that I should know. And I've taught enough people exactly what I've just taught you guys that have given me feedback back and said, yes, this actually did happen in exactly the way that you said that it was going to happen. And now this person that I've done this to feels better. It works. The reason why it's better to do it on somebody else as opposed to trying to do it with yourself is that I have seen them sort of shift positions around a little bit. And if you have somebody else that's doing it, I guess it's not as easy. And you can't really reach your own back very well. And sometimes for lack of better terms, they'll scuttle their way back there. If they, I don't know, sense that somebody's trying to find them or something, they'll do whatever they can to sort of hide away. So it's best if somebody else does it for you, but you can still do it for yourself as well. If you don't have anybody around that understands what I'm saying here with all of this, or if you don't have anybody around at all, it works. I would really love for you guys to try it out and see what the results are with it. And if you do get results out of it, please let me know. I'm always really interested in hearing the experiences that people have just in general, but especially with this kind of thing, because it's so, I don't know. It's so bizarre, I guess you could say. It's one of those weird things that it's like, wow, that's really cool how that works. Now, like I said, I'm not sure as far as the energy vampires are concerned, if the energy vampires would be kind of classed as maybe a sentient version of these little friends, because they do sort of have the same traits with stuff. And I'm kind of wondering if basically they come from the same place, or maybe it's these little friends or the energy vampires are sort of a more evolved version of the little friends. It may be possible. I don't know. But it's one of those things, like I said, it's like they're just slightly out of phase from ours enough so that we don't normally detect them, but they are detectable if you do kind of certain things to reveal them on you, or whether or not you're involved with them or not. And I have seen sometimes people have multiples of them attached to them. I think I've seen, the most I've seen on one person at one time was 7. They had them in different places on their body. It was 7 total, and each of them was doing a different thing to the person. That's the most I've seen. In general, I'll just see like maybe 1 or 2 that are attached, sometimes up to 3, but that's getting to be a high average. So when you do the capture of them and wash them away, it's definitely important to kind of go back over things just to make sure that you got all of them, basically. So that's it as far as the little friends and energy vampires are concerned. And I wanted to get into a subject that it sort of relates in a way to all of this. And it's in regards to like interdimensional beings and just other dimensions in general. And like I said, I don't know if maybe the energy vampires and the little friends are actually like beings that are from another dimension that enter into ours, or if they're ours, but, you know, have sort of evolved separately or differently than what you normally see. I don't know if which one is the case, but I, again, sort of relate all of these things together and tend to talk about them all together, because I do think that they at least have some relation to each other. So, before getting into the interdimensional beings topic, I guess I should explain my viewpoints on the way that, reality works, at least according to all of my experiences and research into the topic. So here's how I see things happening. Each time that we make a choice, a new dimension is created to allow that decision to play itself out, you know, fully through the future. So, I mean, that's how that's sort of the multiple dimension theory, kind of in a nutshell. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, where every decision creates a whole new dimension. That's the multiverse theory of things. Don't really like using that word, but it's sort of the best applicator, I guess you could say. Anyways, I do think that's really how things happen, and I've even seen some evidence for it myself. The dimensions, the different dimensions that are there, that are created, you could imagine a beach, and there's waves of the ocean coming onto the beach. And as the waves come onto the beach, you see this foam that's created on the beach. And each bubble of that foam is sort of like the dimensions. Each bubble is its own dimension, its own universe within this foam of endless amounts of other dimensions, each one of them having been created by some event that diverged from the rest in its history. The dimensions, again, kind of going with this beach analogy, you could look at them being lined up along this beach. And on some in some dimensions, things are real close. You know, they're real close matches. So there might only be like one, maybe two differences overall in these universes. So the dimension could have been created because of Kim wanting a glass of or a dish of mint chocolate ice cream as opposed to vanilla ice cream. So in one dimension, Kim ate mint chocolate ice cream, and then in the other one, Kim ate vanilla ice cream. You know, it's sort of that way with the way that the dimensions are created. They expand outwards from each other based upon all of these different decisions that are made. Well, the universe doesn't like to waste data. It doesn't like to waste space, you know? You could think of it as being a giant computer, and all of these different dimensions are stored on a hard drive in the creation. And the hard drive, in order to save space, that you have to go through and delete some files. You run a defragmentation program on the files to sort of put things that are mismatching slightly or that are broken apart from each other, put them back together again and that sort of thing. The analogy is there. Hopefully you guys are getting the idea with it. The dimensions, each one of these dimensions that's created, they're vast amounts of data, right? Well, in order to save data, in order to save space on the hard drive, the universe will crash dimensions together. It will compress things together. So ones that are real closely matched will sort of have their bubbles popped, and everybody that was existent in there sort of crashes together into a new singular one. So 10 of them crash into one, and suddenly out of 10, you have one. And that's how this universe now is going to be, right? Hopefully you guys are getting the idea with it. anyways, so the way that things work is that when you have these differences that are there, it sort of becomes a consensus reality situation. The information that's known in the world, for example, Earth here, for example, the history of the world is remembered by people based upon how many people came from a dimension that had that as its primary memory. Okay. So I'll give you an example. I know that's saying it a little bit confusingly, but I remember years ago, and I guess you could say sometimes with all of this, some people do remember things slightly differently than what people normally, the average person, remembers. To me, for instance, Nelson Mandela died in prison years ago, and he, his death in prison led to the ending of apartheid. Okay. So that was the driving force with it, was his death in prison. To others, however, they remember him actually being released from prison, and that's what caused things to come to a head and just recently died. Although some people remember him dying four or five times in between. And if you do a quick search on the internet, you'll find people that talk about this stuff, that remember distinctly different events happening in a certain way. And other people saying, yes, I remember that. I remember that. That's exactly how things were. Some people can remember these events from the dimensions that they originated from. Okay. But if more people remember that Nelson Mandela died after he got out of prison, then that is what quote unquote history will be. It's a consensus reality. The more people that again, quote unquote, vote that this is what occurred, then that is sort of what's overwritten as the memories of everybody who has now crashed into these dimensions together. Some people, though, can remember the events that end up occurring in their original dimensions. Again, I'll give another example. For me, I remember New Zealand being in a different place than what it actually is. And I'm not the only one, again, just like the Nelson Mandela thing, that remembers it this way. I remember it being on a different side of Australia than what it is now. And I remember it actually extremely distinctly because I did a lot of research about New Zealand because I was writing a book about New Zealand. It was based in New Zealand. So I had been looking at maps and all different kinds of stuff. And then I've later realized, wait a minute, things are different. You see? Another one is Billy Graham. Billy Graham, to me, died many, many years ago. He was somebody that my mom and I that my mom and dad both loved a lot. They loved the guy. And I remember very distinctly when he died, there was a big funeral that was on TV. It was on ABC, if I remember correctly. And my mom and I sat there watching the funeral, and I looked over and I remember distinctly my mom crying about it all. And so sad, and heads of state came about, you know, giving their talks about him and everything. And yet come to find out that's not actually what ended up happening. You see, these things, they're remembered by certain people, I think, because of things that end up occurring in their lives. So for example, with my wife, she remembers these things, I think, because she's actually experienced having a near-death experience, which I'll actually be going into on Wednesday's show. I'll be talking about near-death experiences and reincarnation, and she's going to be actually coming on to the show for a little while to talk about her near-death experience and some of the things that went on with it. I think you guys might find that pretty interesting. So, for her, I think it's because she's had this near-death experience, and so she's kind of acutely aware of the woo-woo side of things, I guess you could say. And for me, I've got some pretty unique extraneous circumstances with myself, so I think that I remember them because of that as well. It may be the same with other people out there. It's sort of with that consensus reality, if more people believe that event A happened instead of event B happening, then event A is going to be the winner, and all the people that are now in that dimension will have their data kind of patched into their consciousnesses. Now, as far as the dimensions crashing together, just to hit that part of things real quick, you'll never see a dimension where dinosaurs still exist crashing into our dimension because they're so far away from each other in the way that history has worked out. The ones that crash together are closely related together. There's only going to be a few differences between. So you're not going to see major things, although you might. But you're not going to see something as extreme as suddenly we are waking up one day and dinosaurs are still walking around and they're populating the planet and so on and so forth. That's a way too vast of a difference, and it would be too obvious, and it would essentially crash the system, so to speak. So that's sort of how the interdimensional idea works, sort of as a quick and dirty explanation for it. If you guys are interested in it, I actually could go into further detail later, and I probably will in another episode, because there really is a lot more that goes into it. Again, this was just a quick and dirty kind of explanation as to my thoughts on the multiple dimensions of things. But I mention it because the fact is that we do have interdimensional beings interacting with us. Now, my thought is that Well, let's take angels, for example. There are a lot of people out there that have had interactions with angels. I myself think that I have. When I was younger, I was 9 years old. There was a playground that was across the street from where I lived, and I went to walk across the street to go to this playground. My parents and about 10 other people were standing outside in front of our house talking to each other. And as I was walking across the street, there was a car that started coming really quick towards me. I mean, it was barreling. And something picked me up and threw me back across the street into my mother's arms. I mean, it lifted me up a good 5 feet off of the ground and flung me backwards into the waiting arms of my mom. Nobody saw exactly what it was. Nobody, could see movement or anything like that. But whatever it was, it saved me from being run over by this car. I mean, it just missed me by a matter of feet. I look back on that event and I wonder if maybe it was an angelic being of some kind that had stepped forward and saved me for whatever reason that may be. And I know that other people have had that kind of an interaction as well. I mean, a lot of people have heard about guardian angels and all that kind of stuff. Well, to me, angels are sort of an interdimensional being. They are from another plane that is slightly shifted off of ours. The thing with angels is that they're neither good nor bad. They're just like human beings, where they have different aspects to them. They have different ways of thinking or different ways of doing things. And they're neither good nor bad. You know, people aren't good or bad. You can't really delineate people into that. Everybody has sort of different portions of each within us. And I think that angels work the same way. They are, at least in my experiences, I've done a lot of research on the topic. I've done a lot of examination of things. I've had a lot of encounters with a lot of different things and a lot of different beings in my life. From what I understand of things, they are able to interact with our dimension because they actually originated here. But they have, I guess you could say, moved on after they've learned all the lessons that were available to them here. And they moved on essentially into the quote unquote next plane of existence, just as we will do someday if we choose to do so. We can't interact directly with their dimension, however you want to put it, because we haven't learned how to yet. We're not from there, so we can't interact with it yet. But we will in time, at least from my understanding of things. However, they interact with ours because they originated here. And so it's still part of their background, still part of their makeup, I guess you could say. That's my understanding as far as angels goes. You could categorize demons in that as well, because angels and demons are sort of the same beings. They just have different agendas. They're different, I guess you could say, factions of each of them. The angels, they take sort of a hands-off approach to things. For the most part, they don't directly interfere with humanity very much. Mainly because it's all our own lessons that we're learning. Now, again, this is my understanding of things. I've not actually spoken to angels, that I'm aware of, but from my understanding of things, that's sort of what it is. And so that's my take as far as angels and that type of thing is concerned. I think that as far as any interdimensional beings are concerned, you have to look at them with the light of the fact that they're going to be just like us, at least at their their core of things, because they're going to have a soul. They're going to have the dichotomy between them of the good and bad and positive and negative, you know, the duality of it all. But the, they might have a different way of interacting with things, and they might have different agendas that they're following. So hopefully all that makes sense. So, I wanted to talk real quick as well, real quick before I have to leave, because I've only got a couple of minutes left here, but I wanted to touch on the topic of prayer, because, this subject is sort of tying into everything, because it has to do with the energy of it all. And all of this stuff tonight has been about, at the core of things, the energy and the way that we interact with everything. So what I want to say is don't pray for people to get better. Pray that they are better. There's no asking for things. You just know that they are a reality. I mean, that's taking a step from belief into knowing, right? They're already there. You just need to access the reality that they are better in and make the body that they have now recognize that it is that instead. Again, talking about the different dimensions, these different dimensions, your body could be healthy in that dimension, whereas here it's unhealthy. And you could essentially access the information that's in that other universe, in that other dimension, and entrain your own body into becoming this way. That's sort of how things work. That's why prayer works. And when I say prayer, meditation, intention, it's all the same thing. It's all about what you are putting forth as being the ultimate goal of what you would like to see happen, because you want to make change in things, right? They're all one and the same. If you believe that things are crap, then they're going to be crap. But if you think that things are going to hell in a handbasket, then that's exactly what's going to happen, because we're putting it out there. It's created, right? If you think that you're not healthy, then you're not healthy. These are sort of the basics as far as the way that our thoughts are. This is how we change the way that we interact with things. And I would really love to get more into this, but unfortunately I'm out of time. So I'm going to talk about that subject there probably on Wednesday, because I do think that it really goes forward into the idea of reincarnation and what we're here for and what we're heading to, essentially. So guys, this has been a great topic, I think. I had a lot of fun talking about it. I had a lot of fun bringing this information forward to you. And I hope that all of it was understandable for you guys. I hope that you got a lot out of it as well. And if you want to send an email to me, you can send it to feedback@openeyesnetwork.com. I appreciate hearing from you guys about any of these subjects that I talk about. I really do. I have a great time listening to it and listening to what you guys have to say about it all. If you want to go to my show notes for this show, they will be at openeyesnetwork.com/OE069. I will have the links to everything that I talked about here at that location. If you want to go to my Twitter and Facebook pages, you can go to Open Eyes Network on both of those platforms. You can find me also on Facebook at Ira Robinson. And remember, on Wednesday, I'm going to talk about reincarnation and near-death experiences. It should be a really interesting topic as well. Guys, until next time, keep safe out there and have fun. And thank you so much, as always, for listening. I really appreciate you guys. I love every one of you. And thank you so much for all that you do. Be sure to stick around. Michael Vera will bring you the Late Night in the Midlands in just a few minutes. And remember, tune in on Wednesday, latenightinthemidlands.com, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.